It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW Sitka. Today is Wednesday, April 3rd. I'm Erin Fulton with Raven News. Governor Mike Dunleavy has announced four appointments to the State Board of Fisheries and Board of Game, which oversee management of populations on the state's lands and in its waters. Marit Carlson Van Dort is the only reappointment to the boards and was reappointed to the Board of Fisheries. She served on the board since 2019. Carlson Van Dort is from the village of Chignik Bay and is president and CEO of its native village corporation, Far West Incorporated. The new appointee to Alaska's Board of Fisheries is Curtis Chamberlain from Aniak and Bethel on the Kuskokwim River. Chamberlain works as Assistant General Counsel for the Calista Corporation and previously served on the Kuskokwim Corporation Board of Directors. Chamberlain will replace outgoing board member John Wood of Willow, whose term expires at the end of June. For the Board of Game, the governor has appointed two new members to replace current board chair Jerry Burnett of Juneau, as well as James Cooney of Eagle River, whose terms also expire at the end of June. New appointee Jake Garner works as the vice president of operations for the Yuzinkni Native Corporation based in Anchorage. He is a member of the Alaska Wild Sheep Foundation and Safari Club International's Alaska chapter. The other Board of Game appointee, Jim Bechtel of Thorne Bay, is the regional coordinator for the Mule Deer Foundation. He holds a master's degree in geology and spent nearly four decades working for the U.S. Forest Service, the majority of that time in the Dongass National Forest. He also previously served as the chair of a Fish and Game Advisory Committee on Prince of Wales Island. For both boards, members serve three-year terms. The new appointees' terms officially start on July 1st. The city and borough of Juneau is moving forward with a plan to relocate its seasonal campground to a different site farther from downtown, despite nearby business owners' concerns. According to Mayor Beth Weldon, the assembly is being tasked with finding an option that is, quote, the best of the very, very worst. KDOO's Clarice Larson reports.
The plan to move the city-run campground used by people experiencing homelessness was proposed last month. City officials cited an increase in illegal activities there last summer. The new proposed campground location is in an area mostly populated by commercial businesses and is next to the city's indoor cold weather shelter. City officials say moving there would make it easier to provide maintenance and emergency services to campers and ease the campground's impact on nearby neighborhoods. But last week, a group of business owners nearby wrote a joint letter in opposition of the plan. Kyle McDonald with Alaska Coach Tours testified at Monday's Juneau Assembly meeting. He says the city's proposed location would put commercial businesses at continued risk of vandalism, break-ins, and other criminal activities that were associated with the indoor cold weather shelter.
I recognize the difficult position the assembly is in right now, and I recognize there are no easy solutions. We've seen it all winter long with break-ins of the buses, destruction of equipment, and garbage scattered all around our property, including used needles. Putting this camp right in the middle of the industrial zone area, full of local businesses, is not ideal for anyone.
He and the group proposed a different location even further down Thane Road called the Little Rock Dump, which is owned by Docks and Harbors. The group says moving the campground further down Thane would be safer for both businesses and campers. But resident Kieran Riley opposes the move. They're concerned that the location is too far away for campground users to walk to.
Pushing the mill campground to Thane with no way to access it will make it just that, inaccessible. Without a shuttle, there's not a lot of incentivization to walk all the way out the road to a tent when you can put that tent somewhere else that's more accessible to food land or to other resources to get food.
City officials say the city just doesn't have enough staff to shuttle people to and from the campground. The assembly voted to move forward with the plan and move the campground next to the cold weather shelter for now. But multiple members say they have concerns. A final decision will likely come at the April 29th assembly meeting. In the meantime, the cold weather shelter is set to close April 15th. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
Bristol Bay communities are struggling with numerous overdoses as tens of thousands of lethal doses of opioids flow into the region. A group of community members in Dillingham is advocating for a united effort within the entire community to protect and help people recover. As KDLG's Christina McDermott reports, the support group creates a space for people to talk through their grief, discuss gaps in care, and advocate for a coordinated effort to address the region's drug crisis.
In January, Terry Mann stood in front of the Dillingham City Council and told the story of his daughter, Delana, who died from an overdose last May.
I don't want this thing to happen to anyone else. It's the toughest thing the toughest thing I've ever continued to go through in my life is to lose a child.
In the meeting, he said the community desperately needs more behavioral health services, more education about the dangers of drug use, and easier access to care. Mann asked the city to support a group that he and a few other community members have formed. It doesn't have an official name yet, but it's a place where people can tell their stories and organize to advocate for a cohesive community response to fight overdose and drug misuse. Mann says he was blindsided by what happened to his daughter. Delana had just graduated with honors from Dillingham High School and would have studied at the University of Hawaii that fall. The night she died, she went for a drive, Mann says. When she didn't return or respond to his messages, he went looking for her. He says he thought the car might have broken down somewhere without phone signal. He says when he found her, he administered Narcan because he kept it on hand and started CPR.
By then, she had probably already passed, and I did try to save her life. Found her with tin foil.
Mann says his goal now is to reach out and help other families and community members so that they don't have to live through something similar.
I want to honor my daughter, and I don't want her death to be in vain.
Mann says the community needs to do more to address widespread drug use in the area. He says that since his daughter's death last May, three other teenagers with ties to Dillingham have fatally overdosed. And he says the risk is real for everyone. Longtime Dillingham EMT Malcolm Wright says that death from substance abuse is nothing new in Dillingham, but he says the synthetic opioid fentanyl has caused a spike in overdose deaths in recent years. Wright says the highly potent drug is fairly inexpensive and easy to access.
What's available, even though it looks like a commercial pill, is of varying doses, and it's very hard to know how much one is taking, and it's mixed with other things.
After losing a loved one or community member to overdose, people may react differently, says Dillingham-based A.J. Knittel, a licensed professional counselor specializing in grief. He says some people may feel anger towards the people selling drugs. Others, he says, may feel a call toward making change. And he says that others still may feel a sense of apathy, which is sometimes used as a personal protection mechanism.
It could lead into being desensitized to it as well, where then it creates an expectation for the future where this is just normalized in our society, which we don't want to normalize overdose loss whatsoever.
Tiffany Webb is another member of the new community support and advocacy group. She says that stigma, judgment, and shame towards those using drugs is one of the reasons people would rather die than ask for help. Webb has spent 5 years as the opioid overdose prevention coordinator at Kanakanak Hospital. She says she's working with the group as a citizen, not in an official role. Webb says that a person can't shame someone into getting better.
How we respond to our pain gets vilified a lot. We do it in our own families to each other, but we also give labels to other people.
Holding a boundary, she says, while still communicating with a loved one is hard. But she says that's a healthier way to maintain a relationship with someone using drugs. Webb and her fellow group member Terry Mann say they want to see a united effort to address the opioid epidemic from organizations in the area, like the city, schools, tribes, the Bristol Bay Area Health Corporation, and other organizations like the Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation and the Bristol Bay Native Association. Webb says she wants to make the risk of drug use common household knowledge, and that will take a united effort. Recovery services need to be as easy to access as the drugs themselves, she says. And she says that with potent drugs like fentanyl, the community can't risk alienating anyone.
I know it's hard to hear about. I know it's hard to talk about. But we have to talk about this stuff through the tears and through the hurt, because if we don't, nothing's going to change.
For its next steps, the group, says Webb and Mann, is creating a working definition of what prevention means across the board, not just for specific organizations, so that everyone can have a common understanding. In Dillingham, I'm Christina McDermott.
Taking a look at the community calendar. Sitka Tribe of Alaska invites Sitka mothers age 18 and older to a free talking circle from 11:45 to 1 today at 204 Siganaka Way. The Mount Edgecombe High School Unanga Dance Group performs at 12:15 today at the Sheldon Jackson Museum. Friends of Sheldon Jackson Museum invite the public to its free annual meeting at 5:30 p.m. today at the Westmark Hotel and via Zoom. The Sitka Sound Science Center presents information about volunteering and signing up to help at the center at 5:30 p.m. today. The Sitka Library Commission meets at 6 p.m. at Harrigan Centennial Hall. And a free natural history seminar features Drs. Andy Szabo and Lauren Eckhart of the Alaska Whale Foundation with a talk titled The Ecological and Social Impacts of Humpback and Gray Whales and Herring Interactions in Sitka Sound. That is at 7 p.m. today in room 229 at the University of Alaska Southeast Campus. I'm Erin Fulton, and this has been Raven News.